Hi everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the UBS Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. My name is Paul Schneider, Head of Markets Focus at UBS, and I'm here with my colleague Madeline Jenkins, European Technology Analyst. And in this second episode, we're going to take a look at quantum computing, which we recently explored in a major flagship report. So Madeline, in part one, we understood a little bit more about what a quantum computer is and how the process of building one comes about. Perhaps for the second episode, I'd like to go in a slightly different direction, if we may, and understand why did we feel that this was the right moment to publish a major report on quantum computing here at UBS?
We actually partnered with UBS Evidence Lab on this report. And one of the things we did was track the document intensity and effectively the mentions of quantum computing, not just for tech companies, but wider sectors. And what's really interesting is that you see a huge spike actually in mentions in the last few months. And this is kind of similar to our more qualitative signals that we're seeing. So getting a lot more questions from investors, a lot more interest. I think especially given the AI boom we're seeing, a lot of people are increasingly worried about the terminal values of these names and just generally disruptive risks in technology. And for us, the big one is quantum computing.
You mentioned AI in your response just then. What impact might this have on the AI market and obviously adoption that we're seeing?
Sure. So we try and lay out in the report some nearer term conclusions, because I think for a lot of people, quantum computing is still quite far away. I mean, consistently, it's been 5 years away for the last 30 years. And one of these nearer term conclusions is the use of something called a hybrid quantum classical algorithm. Now, all that means is some of your algorithm is done on a quantum computer and some is done on a classical computer. And you don't need very good quantum computers to do this. Now, a good hybrid quantum classical algorithm for the nearer term is centered around molecular simulation. And our view is that these hybrid quantum classical algorithms could cannibalize traditional compute workloads in the medium term.
And perhaps taking that a stage further, what impact could it have on key sectors?
I'd say in the nearer term, the big use case is molecular simulation. And when pharma companies are discovering new drugs, they're obviously trying to simulate these molecules and how they interact with the environment. And it's actually done quite poorly at the moment. Or you basically can't effectively simulate a molecule greater than 5 atoms. And because molecules are also inherently quantum, you can model them with a quantum computer much more effectively. And there's a famous hybrid quantum classical algorithm called VQE that can do this. More medium and longer term, you will start seeing optimization benefits in financial sectors, logistics sectors, industrials, areas like that.
So we're talking here about a step change in both the cost potentially involved in some of these sectors, but also the speed with which we can achieve bigger outcomes. Is that fair to say?
Yes, exactly. You can get more accurate, faster, and more cost-effective solutions.
In some of what we've just discussed, AI was mentioned, and also the cannibalization of workloads. How might that play out?
So, for example, in this molecular simulation algorithm, currently what's being used is traditional compute servers by pharma companies. And so you might see those workloads shift. However, it's important to factor in some potential positives on the traditional compute market. There's a famous concept called Jevons paradox, which is effectively as the cost of compute or something comes down, then the demand goes up. And so that's something you could see, that quantum computers actually generates increased demand for traditional compute. You also do need quite significant classical computers when you're running these hybrid quantum classical algorithms, which could also increase demand.
Another near-term potential implication is security. You mentioned that a little bit in part one. How should we think about security as a potential risk factor as it relates to quantum?
Sure. So as we mentioned in part one, this famous algorithm, Shor's algorithm, effectively shows how a quantum computer can break current encryption methods that all our data is encrypted on. Now, we are far away from having a quantum computer capable of doing this. I'd say probably at least 10 years. But that does not mean it's not a risk now. Effectively, because of something called harvest now, decrypt later, companies, governments can harvest data and decrypt it at a later date when they have the quantum computer capable. Now, for long life cycle data, like government secrets, financial data, health data, this clearly presents a challenge and we need to update our encryption methods.
That sounds like an important part of the story. When you read about quantum compute, and as you say, mentions continue to grow almost exponentially, perhaps for some of our listeners, what are some of the most overhyped claims as it relates to quantum and any that you can think of that are underhyped?
I don't know if I would say anything is overhyped. I mean, the vast amount of compute available to us once these quantum computers become capable is just immense. And it's not like GPUs versus CPUs, which is just an improvement on what we currently do. This is a tectonic shift in the compute available. The two things I would frame as underappreciated is how soon this is going to come. And I've talked a bit about these kind of hybrid quantum classical algorithms that you can use in the nearer term, but hitting something called quantum advantage, where a quantum system significantly outperforms a classical system, comes as early as the 2030s, which for a lot of people is probably sooner than they would think. And then the other thing I would just say is I think people think that these things use a lot of power and they just don't. And we touched on this in the earlier episode, but a lot of the computing power comes from the inherent quantumness of these particles and not through energy use.
One thing you mentioned there, quantum advantage, perhaps we could just rewind a little bit and go into a bit more detail. What do we mean by quantum advantage exactly?
So it's effectively when a quantum computer significantly outperforms a classical system on any metric, right? Cost, energy efficiency, performance. And, you know, there are varying definitions out there. The one we use in the note is reaching 100 logical qubits. So those are 100 error-corrected qubits.
Madeline, clearly you've been out marketing and talking through this story with investors. What do you think is the single most important reason that people should start to engage with quantum, even if the technology, as we've referenced, is at its earlier stages?
I'm going to give you two, if that's okay, Paul. But from my discussions, the focus generally is on the security risks, because that's something that you have to deal with near term. And we talked about these new encryption algorithms, but they need a lot more compute and a lot more memory. And the implications for the IoT market, your smartphone market, everything is quite huge. And you should start seeing updates in government regulation for this. And then the second is impact on the AI market. Obviously, we're seeing a huge amount of investment in data center capacity at the moment. And figuring out how quantum computing ultimately will impact this market is hugely important for a lot of people.
It seems as though we have a fair way to go as it relates to quantum, but it's also clear that investors shouldn't underestimate the importance of this topic, the security implications near term, but some of the longer term implications as well.
I don't think you necessarily need to see kind of classical workloads going to quantum in huge volumes to start seeing the impact in some of the share prices of these AI names.
Madeline, perhaps one final question before we wrap up this second episode. When people think about technology and shifts, they'll remember perhaps the first time they sent an email or the first time they used or saw a smartphone. With that in mind, can we place quantum computing into context?
I think a good analogy is when we built the first computer. Now, I definitely wasn't around, maybe you were, Paul. But before that, we were just doing calculations on pen and paper. And when the first computer came, the amount of compute we had available was enormous. I would say the shift is very similar. It's a huge amount more compute at much lower cost, much lower energy consumption, and therefore it has the potential to impact this world in ways that we can't even imagine yet.
There we have it for our listeners, a huge potential tectonic shift and certainly something to watch for. Madeline, I'm sure all those listening appreciate your insights. Thank you for visiting the UBS Global Research Pod Hub. This second episode has been an overview of the implications of quantum computing with myself, Paul Schneider, and my colleague, Madeline Jenkins, here at UBS. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tune in again and share this episode with a friend or colleague. And as ever, we welcome your feedback.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and/or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation, nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content and has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. Copyright UBS 2026. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.